Hey, Zero Block 30 listeners, you can find us every Tuesday and Friday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. Prime members can also listen ad-free on Amazon Music. Welcome back to another edition of Zero Block 30, and today we have six rounds in the magazine. Round number one, from wearing protection to taking the rear with the gear to going on long, sweaty humps, military terms and sex phrases go together like 200-degree porta-johns and whacking it. Round number two, why did a Marine Corps sergeant go to Haiti with some boxes full of guns and ammo? Well, to become president there, of course. Why else would he go? Round number three, three Coast Guard crews from separate stations spent 16 hours of their Thanksgiving holiday looking for a kite surfer near Ocean City, New Jersey. The outcome was wavy with the side of gravy. I mean, you could tell Kate wrote these so much today.
You're welcome.
Round number four, we have an interview with Sean Karp. He's an Army veteran and coach now for the Jaguars on their strength and conditioning team. He was honored this week, so we're going to bring him on the show to talk about his story. It's pretty, pretty fantastic.
And
round number five.
He answered your questions even though he knows you'll never run?
Yeah, I'm going to talk to him about that. I'm going to talk to him about me never running. You'll hear that a little bit later. Okay. Round number five, the 2020 elections are fast approaching, and in preparation, the military has released a reminder to active duty troops of what they can and cannot spout out about on their own political social media accounts or wherever, Facebook, Twitter. They have rules, and they are going to enforce them, I guess, this time around. And finally, round number six, the Army-Navy game is next weekend, and yesterday the uniforms came out. We know this because cons would not stop bothering the group chat about it. So we're going to do a little review and talk about the meaning behind some of the details of them as well. But I have an announcement before we continue with the show and get into who it's sponsored by. Cons is not here this week.
Right.
Because he is being punished for a lack of integrity that he showed on Twitter this week. I didn't appreciate it. Kate, I know you didn't as well.
I'm going to be honest with you. I wasn't really following any of it, but I did see that he was banned and I didn't ask questions. So what?
Good corporal there. Yeah.
So what happened?
Our guy, Frankie Borelli, who's on 4Play Pod, he also produces the Barstool radio show and does other things around Barstool as well. He posted a Twitter poll that asked the question, is there more chairs or people in the world? Now, Cons likes to talk to everybody at Barstool on Twitter a lot and interject in a lot of the different conversation that's going on, which
he's
is
a big
great,
Twitter
good.
Hypothetical guy. He yes. loves mixing big, it up in those debates.
Yes.
Always mixing it up in those debates. And in this debate, he took the side of people right away. There was no, I'm going to teach you a lesson. There is no grandeur, where it was obvious, like he tried to make it out later to be. So I think that Cons had a big-time integrity violation and tried to change it when the bulk of people obviously came around that there's way more chairs in the world than people. Because Cons tried to change his view initially.
So he said, he was like, no, there's way more people than chairs. And then he got called out and he was like, never mind, there's more chairs than people.
Classic officer. I just did this to spur on the conversation. No,
and
you didn't.
Overwhelming information came out against his viewpoint.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. And it's not just us. It's not buying Khan's bullshit excuse. Even his guy KFC came out on radio, was like, this is outrageous that he took it back so fast and didn't have the courage or the gumption to stick up for himself or just say, hey, I was wrong. He tried to not be wrong by making everybody else look wrong, which is even worse. You just hate to see it. I cannot allow that on this podcast. That's not what we're about. So he is going to sit out this episode.
He'll
be
a chair?
Back on Tuesday. He's probably sitting out on a chair. Yeah. One of many chairs. There's plenty to pick from.
Oh, we love Cons. He's just he's traveling for a
don't
work thing.
No,
he's traveling
out.
For a work
he's
thing.
Out. He's out. And this show is brought to you by our good friends at Upstart. As many of us have found out the hard way, getting into debt, whether it be social clout or not, is hard to get out of, especially if your credit score isn't great. Thankfully, now there's Upstart.com. It's a revolutionary lending platform that knows that you're more than just your credit score and offers smarter interest rates to help you pay off high interest credit card debt. Upstart goes beyond traditional credit score when assessing your credit worthiness. They actually reward you based on your education and job history in the form of a smarter interest rate. Upstart believes that you are more than just your credit score. They believe in you, and they understand that. They make it fast, simple, and easy to check your rate in just a few minutes. The best part, once the loan is approved and accepted, most people get their funds the very next business day. Over 300,000 people have started to use Upstart to pay off their credit card or meet their financial goals. Free yourself from the burden of high-interest credit card debt by consolidating everything into one monthly payment with Upstart. See why Upstart is ranked the number one in their category with over 300 businesses on Trustpilot, and hurry to upstart.com/ZBT to find out how low your Upstart rate is. Checking your rate is only takes a few minutes, and it won't affect your credit score at all. That's why upstart.com/ZBT is the way to go. Let's start the show. That's without cons, because he is suspended, and it's not because he has other obligations this week. It's because he's suspended. Let's start the show. Kate, what happened on social media that spurred you to write this tweet this week?
Yes, for round number one, it wasn't even military related at first. There is this viral tweet going around where it started with basketball. So there was a picture, there's side by side, a picture of basketball players on a court next to a photo of a couple in bed, clearly either about to get it on or having had just gotten it on. And the tweet says...
They haven't gotten it on. They're not sweaty at all.
They're not sweaty enough, for sure.
Yeah.
It said, what's something that you can say during a basketball game that you can also say during sex? And it got a lot of fun answers like, I got next, or great ball handling. We stink, solid D, not in my house. That's for a Christian family there, I think.
Yeah.
But
yep.
So it got a lot of fun answers. So on the Zero Blog 30 Twitter, I went over there, took that same picture of that pre-sex couple, not sweaty enough, mm-hmm. and a photo of Marines scuzzing the deck. And I said, what's something you can say in the military that you can also say during sex? And our fabulous, wonderful, amazing listeners and followers on Zero Blog 30 came through with the good answers. Cons said, his answer was, do you know where I went to school? That's something he would say.
I mean, I could see him actually doing that too. Just
for
unbelievable.
Sure. He could say that during sex and during, it would only get him off, but you know, that's fine. Somebody else said, I'm up. They see me. I'm down. Referring to their penis, which made me laugh. Ride on top with the big gun. A guy saying that to a lady would absolutely, boy, would I be dry. Anyways.
Yeah, but not with the one with our guy, angry staff officer. He said, wet gap crossing, which I thought was a good one. Next up was Michael. He said, 9 to the front and 6 to the rear. That's the way we do it in here. That's a pretty good one.
I like this one. 2 to the chest, 1 to the head. I mean, be careful where you put your cack, referring to our cack cards. Back blast area, all clear. Negligent discharge. You never want any of that. Bed rest with head privileges. Love that. Aim small, miss small. This is another one. I like Butterbar Panda said, the Oakleys are staying on. You got to have your eye pro for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
We can stay here all day until we get this right. That's another common. We're not going anywhere to fix this. Brad Ping said, gas, gas, gas.
Which, that one might be the best one. Because there but for the grace of God go I. Everybody's had a little, we'll say it, fartsy slip out every now and then.
We had a caller on radio. Remember her? She called. We were at, I don't even know what the topic was. And she was like, I accidentally farted on my boyfriend's dick one time. And remember
oh,
that?
Oh, yeah.
On radio, on live radio.
And she was telling her mom about it.
Yeah, that's right. It was that was a whole weird, I don't remember what led up to that, but that is a thing that gets yelled. I said, swear I have a no shave chit here somewhere. So, docking pubes. Attention, yeah. Private. Another one said, come on, just do it. It's only one weekend a month. I love that. A little reserves goofing and a little. That's for the married couples out there. Chaps, this one can be dedicated to you. It's okay. I fire blanks because you had your what?
Little vasectomy joke. Love it.
You had your vas deferens obliterated, right? Is that the term they used?
Completely destroyed. Absolutely.
Maximilian Marta said, butta butta jam. So I would love to hear somebody say that. He also said, I can't hear you louder. Ray Hines said, brrrt, like it. I don't know. I just liked that. And then
I think that was the brrrt. It's supposed to be the A-10 firing.
The A-10 firing in cadence at an accelerated pace. That would be nightmare fuel. I got your 6. Take a knee.
I can't believe nobody said, open your bitch ass mouth.
That'd be a good one. Chaps, you said, here's yours. Thinking of Mrs. Chaps here, I'm about to unload, show clear, and then break you down shotgun style and give you a bolt bore check. You're in your prep time.
Now that one I feel like is way too military specific.
Yeah. I don't know what goes on over there at the and then I love this one. This at Kenjin Burner said, one day there might actually be another person on the other end of this thing.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah.
Oh, so, man. Well done. Well, we definitely have the horniest podcast in town, and it's not just because of Horny Brent. Sorry, Brent.
Yeah, it's not just because of our producer. So I just thought those answers were really fun. I love all the interactions we have. If you don't follow us on Twitter or Instagram or YouTube, ZeroBlog30, check us out. We're on all those things. So thank you to everyone who responded. And that's that. On to round number two.
Let's get into round number two. Some actual stories going on around the world. This one, you know, there's stories that happen in real life that we come across, whether it's through Marine Times or Stars and Stripes or wherever it is, that you think, if this came out on Netflix, we would have a round on this show making fun of it, because there's no way that it would actually happen. That's the reason why we made fun of The Code for so long. That's the reason why we make fun of a lot of military movies. But some of these stories that come out, and this is one, if it came out on Netflix or on Amazon Prime, you were like, no way, this is actually true. But this is 1,000% true.
Right. And this is in the same vein as, like you were saying, this like, nah, that didn't really happen. Remember on our one of our September episodes, we told you about 20-year-old Job Wallace, a young devil dog based out of Camp Pendleton, and he was on leave and he never came back. So they're searching for him. His family's frantic. We had his own family members tweeting at us, remember, being like, please help us find him. And it turns out he went to the border in Texas and thought that he could take out the area's drug cartels and human traffickers, vigilante style, with his high-speed boot camp training. And we're like, that's insane. That's ridiculous. Well, this story one-ups it. This story takes that and makes that look like nothing.
Kate, you know I don't normally like explain things to you or correct like grammar, because I'm the worst at it too, of mispronouncing things. But the seminarian inside my brain, because I used to want to be a preacher, will not let that name pronunciation as Job go by. That is Job.
Oh, Job. I was like, Job Wallace. What a fucking terrible name. Job. Job. Well, they should have put an E on the end. I'm sorry. His family should have put an E.
I agree. I just couldn't let that one slide. Old Job. He's been through too much.
Well, Job has been through a lot. He tried to become a vigilante down at the border. And when we were reading that story, we're like, that's insane. Can you imagine what his command? Like, they get the notification like, oh, no, he's fine. But he just thought he could take out the Mexican drug cartels. Well, again, this next story definitely takes that, flips it on its head and one-ups it. This comes to us from Jonathan Drew at the Miami Herald. An active duty U.S. machine gunner.
And before you keep going, we also know that if it comes from an actual newspaper and not like the Marine Corps Times or Stars and Stripes or Task and Purpose or something like that, the story is going to be even worse.
Oh, yeah.
If actual newspapers are like, we got to talk about this, yes, then you know it's really, really bad.
That's what piqued my attention. I was like, oh, my God, a regular paper.
The Miami Herald.
Shit. Miami Herald. We're in big trouble now. Indeed, we are. An active duty U.S. Marine machine gunner and marksman instructor with 2nd Marine Division was caught smuggling guns into Haiti and told investigators it was because he wanted to help that country's military learn marksmanship to defeat thugs that are causing instability there. The criminal complaint filed last week in federal court charges Marine Sergeant Jacques Yazdorasseau with smuggling firearms. Dorisseau and one other unnamed person departed an airport from Newbern, North Carolina on
Shout
Veterans
Day. Shout out, Kyle. That's where
Shout
Kyle
Shout out, Kyle. On Veterans Day, of all days. So on Veterans Day, these two in North Carolina and Newbern hop on a plane to Port-au-Prince, Haiti with two plastic containers of firearms and another big plastic container full of ammo. The one important thing he did not have with him, though, any sort of permission or authorization to do that. So, yes, Dorisseau had filled out firearm declarations with American Airlines stating he was carrying unloaded guns, but no, he did not have permission from, one, the U.S. Marines to leave the country, two, permission from U.S. authorities to export firearms, or three, from Haiti to bring them into the country there. So, the big giveaway when he landed, you land in any other foreign country, you know, you have to go through customs. And they weren't even necessarily paying that close attention to him at first, maybe. And he makes it a point to tell them, hey, all this stuff over there doesn't have to go through customs. It's fine. Don't worry about it. No big deal. And also, it can't go through. It would like mess up whatever's in there. And so they're like, what? Huh? So they take his stuff immediately and put it through the thing. And there's this photo of him sitting on the ground in customs, dressed to the nines. He is wearing like
fancy boy
1920s, like the pleated slacks with the vest.
Oh,
with
shit.
Like the
pocket
chain.
I'm looking at it now. My goodness.
And he's leaning against the x-ray machines, and you can see
that. It looks
like
he got that out of Connor's closet.
Oh, yeah. And you can see the x-ray machines just highlighting guns and ammo inside the thing. So he was immediately detained in custody, where he was questioned by U.S. NCIA agents who were in the country. And he told them he had traveled there to defeat the thugs that have been creating a little bit of instability in Haiti. And in describing the 8 firearms, which included 5 handguns and 3 rifles, he told agents he picked every gun specifically to teach marksmanship to the Haitian army. Homeland Security agent Charles Kitchen, great name, you're dealing with Chuck Kitchen. He's bitching. Anyways, stated that Duroseau also brought body armor and an officer's uniform with him. That's probably my favorite part in all this. If you're tired of your rank, if you're a young Lance Corporal listening and you're like, duh, I'm sick and tired of being lower enlisted, fly to another country with an officer uniform and just blend in. Just become an officer somewhere else. You can do it.
You know who did that once before?
Who?
Old Chesty Puller.
Did he?
Yeah. Because he was originally enlisted, and then whenever the war stopped, the original war that he joined for, whenever it stopped, he got out, joined another country's military just because he liked military goofing. And then whenever wars kicked off back in America, he's like, I got to go back, and then became an officer.
There you go. You switched it up a little bit. I just like that his plan was to go to Haiti, get involved with the military there. And since he was so good at shooting and everything and teaching, he was like, oh, they'll automatically make me an officer. Like, he thought mm-hmm. he could go over there, have all this clout, and become something bigger. He told investigators that he knew that what he was doing was illegal, and he knew he'd be arrested in Haiti, but smugly, that it was part of a plan to get attention to make a statement, according to court documents. So,
what a spin zone.
Yeah, total Captain Khan spin zone. Oh, I just did this to teach you guys a lesson. I just did this to bring this into the news.
It was a
Captain
prank.
Khan's. Yeah, it was just a prank. Total prank goofing. So, yeah, he said, this is the other part that besides bringing the officer uniform, Duroseau's buddy that traveled with him told agents that Duroseau had been in contact with the U.S. Embassy in Haiti to tell them that he wanted to become president there. So who knows? But I can only imagine when he gets back to the States. Major General, I just wanted to become president of Haiti. So I have no idea. A warrant for his arrest has been issued here in the States without a doubt. He's either back already or they'll be bringing him back soon. Who knows?
I just think they should give him a negative counseling. In my opinion, there is a lot of thugs going on in Haiti, and you can have good initiative, bad judgment. I think that's what it is. He's a sergeant. Just give him over to his gunny and be like, hey, you need a negative counseling here. It's going to be bad on your fitness report. You're not going to pick up staff sergeant for an additional year. But other than that, did you pick up any tricks of the trade? Because when Chesty Puller went down to Nicaragua and joined the National Guard there when he was assigned there in the 1920s, he picked up a lot of things that really helped out. Like his knowledge from Nicaragua helped out, and that's what led them to victory in the Chosin Reservoir, because he learned how to take pig's fat and rub it on their ankles where they could walk for long periods of time without getting chafed.
Well, unfortunately, it seems like Duroseau never made it out of the airport to learn any of the Haitian army's moves, chaps. That's the sad part. But
maybe
learn
how to fry a plantain.
But part of me wonders. I mean, he was down there dressed in that. I had two schools of thought on this. One, he was either genuinely suffering from some sort of delusion, and he got sucked into something online and believed that he could really, truly, somebody convinced him he could become some kind of big deal down in Haiti. And he, I believe, is of Haitian descent. So I don't know. And because his brother was there to pick him up from the airport and everything, and he never made it out. So he's got family there. He's got connections there.
Maybe his family was like calling out for help. Like, hey, you're in the Marines. Can you come help us here?
So I feel like there's much more. I would love to hear the full story of how he got involved in this in the first place.
We'll get him on the pod.
Yeah, get him on the pod. So either there's some sort of delusion involved there, Or is it something more? Was he smuggling weapons for something else and said, oh, like came up with a story? I have no idea, so I shouldn't speculate. But I'm just really interested to hear the backstory on that. And again,
I really disagree. I think you should speculate. What do you think the reason is?
What was the deal there? But I also, this is just one of those things. On Veterans Day of all days, you're his higher command. You're enjoying the day somewhere.
He's got a belly full of Applebee's.
Yep, you got a belly full of free Applebee's, and you get this phone call that one of your Marines is in Haiti with three boxes full of ammo and guns to teach.
It's probably one of those I'm on leave stories gone wrong. Like you,
yeah.
Like you're telling everybody your marksmanship instructor, and you can teach everybody in Haiti how to do all this stuff. Next thing you know, you get called out on it, so you got to prove it.
Yeah, I have no idea. Or it was. But a
Did you ever have to take guns to a foreign country, like outside of a military flight?
No.
It is a pain in the ass, man. Whenever I used to have to do missions with the Department of State and we would fly into different places, the amount of paperwork that you have to take to bring military-grade weapons to other countries, especially whenever you're dealing with ammunition as well, it is not easy. So obviously this fella has never done that before, because you have to have layers upon layers of paperwork to get in. Just to get it in and out of Japan was unbelievably difficult.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm shocked that American Airlines was like, okay, send it. Like, I'm shocked that they were like, yeah, okay, this is weird, but sure, man.
Yeah,
like,
they don't care leaving the country. It's getting into the other countries that's difficult. That's when you have to have all the military paperwork.
Yeah.
Crazy. We'll be keeping up with this story to see what happens, what his reason was, because I think it's probably pretty fascinating. Hopefully there's nothing wrong with the dude, like, mentally, where it causes him to do this, because then I would feel bad, and we'll just delete this and act like it didn't happen.
Absolutely.
Let's move on to round number three.
All right, this next one comes to us from CNN, another outside the military news source. So you know this captured people's attention. And this one was more for, I think it made people genuinely feel pity. Have you ever been kept away from a holiday for something?
Oh, I haven't been home for holidays in a long time. Like, I haven't gone to, like, where my family lives forever. Mm-hmm. So kind of, yes, like, forever, my entire life.
But, I mean, were you ever stuck on deployment or on duty or on, like,
no,
I know?
Luckily for me, I always kind of got to go home. I mean, I guess there was times where I was on duty, but I don't really remember those too much. But this, we do always ask for those. Like, this is one of those stories whenever you see a social media account like ours or whenever you do ask those stories, these people involved with this story definitely have a story that'll last them the rest of their lives.
Oh, for sure. And like, so, you know, I've been stuck on duty for a Thanksgiving and an Easter and like, whatever. This is a little bit more intense than that. Two helicopters, two rescue boats, and members of a local police force all jumped into action after a kite surfer was seen drifting out to sea on Thanksgiving Day near Ocean City, New Jersey. Things seemed even more urgent when search parties found a black and white Ocean Rodeo Cypher 10 kite in the water, but did not find the board or the missing surfer. So they find the kite as just limply floating across the top of the ocean. They're like, fuck, where's the guy? Like, where's the rest of him? So they've got this MH-65 Dolphin helicopter air crew, 47-foot motorboat, 45-foot response crew boat, New Jersey State Police helicopter and air crew. The wind's blowing, the waves are crashing, the crews are straining their eyes, scanning the sea for a speck in a black wetsuit. And 16 hours into this effort on their Thanksgiving Day. So three different crews from the coast, like tons of people are out looking for this guy. They receive another 911 call because people were at their beach house on Thanksgiving morning when they see this guy drifting out to sea. So they call 911 and they see this kite surfer. They're like, hey, it looks like he's struggling. He's going out to sea. The crews then go and they only find the kite. So they're like, shit, somebody called and said he was struggling. We can only find this one part. So 16 hours into the search now, there's another 911 call and it's this guy.
Hey, gnarly dudes and dudettes. I was out shredding the gnar today, getting pitted. Heard your kooks were out there looking for me. Brought right on. Thanks, man, but I'm all gravy.
Yeah, that's right. The missing person called and reported themselves to be safe. That was the actual recording of the surfer dude who called in, if you couldn't tell.
Gnarly dudes.
So the guy called. He was like, after 16 whole hours, he was like, oh, is that me you guys are looking for? Oh, far out. So the missing kite surfer
contacted. He's like the turtle on Finding Nemo. Like, yes. That's his voice.
Yo, dude. The missing kite surfer contacted Coast Guard watchstanders to inform them that after his kite malfunction, he just cut it free used this board to paddle ashore, and returned home. He was even enjoyed his full Thanksgiving. He had no idea that there was 3 separate Coast Guard stations from up and down the Jersey coast, the state police. He had no idea there was this massive search underway and that all these people had been recalled from their own Thanksgivings to search for him.
But that's the smartest thing you could do. I mean, if you're out there kite surfing, you're getting pushed out to sea, cutting loose and just getting out of it, it's got to be the smartest thing you can do.
It is. The Coast Guard did say, hey, in the future, if you have to cut off part of your whatever, call your local Coast Guard or your local police and be like, hey, if any fishing boats notice a kite surfing parts floating at sea, that's mine. I cut it off. Here's what it looks like, so that people aren't like, oh shit, was there someone attached to this? You know, so that there's no search or anything.
But who would ever think that? I would never think that.
Until
out there kite surfing, goofing, and I get lost at sea, I would never think to call the Coast Guard because I'd be embarrassed. Like, am I going to get in trouble for littering?
Yeah, that's a good point, too.
That's what I was thinking. Think of all the turtles I could get wrapped up in his kite.
Dude, yeah. this kite's really cramping my vibe. So anyways.
Also, how do sea turtles survive if they're cold-blooded? New Jersey's cold. That water's cold in the wintertime.
Are turtles cold-blooded?
I think so.
Oh, my goodness. I don't know.
Turtles are reptiles,
if
right?
You're a military turtle expert, give us a call.
Well, maybe they're amphibious? Let's move on.
All right. Well, anyways.
Before we make ourselves look even stupider than we normally
do. I will say, just again, I feel like there's usually only 2 stories. I feel like we don't tell too much going on with the Coast Guard because I feel like it's one of 2 things. They either rescued somebody or they captured a huge amount of cocaine. But it's something every single day as I'm scrolling for stories, every single day around the country, the Coast Guard is saving people's lives and is a fisherman has a heart attack on a boat or something capsized or this or that. I mean, it's just incredible the amount of shit they do on the day to day. So shout out to them. I feel like we kind of skip over them a lot because it's repetitive stories, but they're all incredible stories. So even though they didn't go and find anybody.
Let a couple cocaine ships pass through every now and then.
Yeah, please let a couple slide,
let
guys.
Let the folks back at home have some booger sugar if they need it.
Yes, please. I mean, come on here.
Also, we need some breaking news music, Bren. Please, breaking news music. Sea turtles. Sea turtles are indeed reptiles. They're reptiles. That's quite enough. Thank you. Sea turtles are reptiles. Let's move on to round number 4.
What? Sea turtles are what?
Reptiles.
Okay, sea turtles and reptiles. Glad we figured that out. Round number 4. I'm looking forward to hearing this one, chaps.
Now on Zero Block 30, I'm privileged to have another JAG guy, finally another JAG guy on this podcast, Sean Karf. Sean, thanks so much for joining us, man.
Oh, thank you. Appreciate you.
All right, so you work on the strength and conditioning staff. I have one question to start out for you. As a strength and conditioning guy, when you found out that Gardner Minshew likes to just be in a jock strap with some bands and things like that, did the Army help prepare you for naked dudes working out?
Oh man. Oh, that's funny. Like, when you're surrounded by that, when you're in the military, like, you know, I mean, you see some of the craziest stuff. I mean, that didn't faze me at all. I remember one of the first games, he's in the locker room and just a jock strap laying in the floor. And everybody's like, did you see that? Did you see that? And I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about. I mean,
yep. You just need to bring them back over. You need to bring them to Afghanistan or to Iraq and let them see what working out over there looks like. I mean, if you have more than just silky shorts on, you're overdressed.
Yeah. Yeah. You don't need to get sweat on anything else. So, it's kind of hard to wash clothes when you don't have a washing machine.
Yeah, no doubt about it. So how is that? How's the difference between working in like a platoon room, you as a former squad leader and things like that, now you're in an NFL locker room. Do you see a lot of the same similarities like from locker room to locker room?
I do. I mean, and then, you know, in the military, you have your own little groups that you stick with. More or less with us, it's with squads. So, but you see that same dynamic in the locker room where position groups will stick with position groups and you know, they're around each other and they grow to be, you know, brothers just like we were. You know, when I had my squad, we did everything together, went out together. And you see that same dynamic in the locker room. So it's pretty cool.
And I've seen some videos of you like out training and things like that with the guys on the field. You're a machine gunner. That's usually bigger dudes, stronger. I noticed that you stick a lot with the defensive linemen. You just like pick the biggest guys and like that's who I'm going to hang out with the most.
I definitely like offensive line and defensive line because they got that grunt mentality. They have that like, all right, there's work in front of me. Let's get it. You know, and they enjoy pushing through and pushing each other. And I like watching that because it brings me back to working with the guys in the military. And, you know, no one if you heard somebody complaining, that you got, you know, stopped pretty quick because everybody else was trying to make, you know, the training as hard as it could get. So I think I gravitate more towards like the big guys and the combos, like tight ends, linebackers, because yeah, they're going to push each other and hold each other accountable more than so the skill guys. I mean, don't get me wrong, those guys do work, but I like watching the dynamic of the big guys and the combos.
So all the guys that are on the team right now for the Jags, if you could take them back and you could go back into your Army days and you could pick them, one of them to be like your platoon sergeant, who do you think you would pick out?
You said platoon sergeant?
Yeah.
Oh, man. That's kind of hard. I was thinking more of like who I would go to war with, but
who's that?
I think I would take Yannick Ngakoue. I mean,
yeah, just because he's a monster. Dude is,
he's like not going to back down from anybody. He's going to, you know, he's not, you know, afraid of fighting. He's a monster.
Yeah, I've heard some rumors too. Even with his old guys, if his own guys need it, he'll do it as well. So let's get into your story. This is a military podcast, not a football podcast, but we had to open up with that because I am a Jags fan. Let's get into what happened to you, because your story is very unique. Looking through and knowing a lot of the different teams and the dynamics, having veterans on staff and strength departments, not unique. But how you got there is a very unique story. Can you kind of walk us through how you ended up getting out of the Army?
So in 2012, on my second deployment to Afghanistan, both of my deployments were in Kandahar. And on this deployment was a little rougher in 2012. We were on a dismounted patrol. I was in the back. I was the weapons squad leader. They called me on the radio and, you know, told me that they saw guys up on a rooftop nearby to bring the gun to the front so we could pull security and put in a support by fire with the gun. And, you know, making my way through the path that had already been cleared. Everybody, you know, I was in the back, so I wasn't expecting anything. And then I stepped on a pressure plate, bomb went off, you know, I tasted chemicals. I saw, you know, I couldn't see anything at first, but I could hear everybody yell my name. I looked down and saw my leg, you know, blood all over my leg, and I'm in a crater. My first thought was to get out of the crater and push myself out of it, because I didn't know if there was something else inside there, if that was just small explosive and something bigger was underneath it. So I was trying to get out of it. And by that time, the medic came by, put the tourniquet on. We were in between two wadis.
What's kind of going on? Because I think that's we've heard these war stories all the time about what happens. What's going through your head whenever you're watching your corpsman, your medic, put the tourniquet on your leg? What's going through your head at that time?
I was like, man, this really hurts.
Yeah.
But it's funny because like the initial shock, it hurt, but then I was also worried about, you know, you're on a patrol. It's not like you're out, you know, out and about just walking down the street.
It's not over. It's not over.
So like your first instinct is, wow, I get, you know, now I'm hurt. Now I'm down. I'm the squad leader, so
right.
I'm like, I got to make sure my guys are good as well. But how can I do that while I'm sitting on a litter with a tourniquet on my leg? So that was my initial thought, was, man, I remember just calling out commands while strapped to a litter, and people were like, shut up. Like, you don't even see what's going on right now.
Yeah. But you can't give that up. Like when you're in charge or you have that leadership position, giving that up in the moment, because I'm sure you felt kind of like how, like I did, where you know something bad could happen. So you want to take charge even more, like, hey guys, we got to do this right now. Like this isn't, not, things are about to get serious.
Oh yeah.
Man. So you end up going back, you're sitting on the litter. Then what happens?
So that path we were on was between two streams or rivers, whatever you want to call it. You know, we call them wadis, or they call them that over there. And then, so we had to get to the other side of one of those so the helicopter could land. The path that we were on was too small for it to land. And so they walked me across the river, and I just remember yelling at the four guys that were carrying me, and I said, if you drop me in this nasty water, I was like, I kept looking down at the water. It just looked disgusting. But so they get me to the other side, and then they decided they were going to splint my leg after we got across, because I remember holding my foot that was still attached, but it was, you know, messed up pretty bad. And I was sitting there holding that leg with my good leg across the river. And then they're like, oh, we got to splint it. And then they started putting the IV on, waiting for the helicopter or the medevac to come in. And
are you guys taking fire or anything like this while this is happening?
Not yet. Nothing's happening at this point. So, you know, they get the splint on, they get the IV in, and I hear the medevac coming in. And at that time, as soon as the medevac landed, the guys that were up on that roof opened up with a PKM on the medevac. And so the medevac picked up and left, because they were in between us and the guys on the roof. So they had to get out of that area. And so now after the medevac picks up and takes off, now the guys that brought me over across the river are now in a firefight with the guys on the rooftop. So they, you know, it was maybe 5 to 10 minutes passed, and another helicopter came in and did a gun run on the building. And then you know, so after they did a couple gun runs, the medevac came back in and landed and picked me up.
And I'm sure that was over the course of how long, you think? 30 minutes or so
From the explosion, or
until you got actually on the helicopter?
About 20 to 30 minutes.
But I bet it felt like fucking years, man. Years.
It was just insane, though. Like, because, like I said, I was strapped to the litter, so I can't see what's going on. I'm calling out, you know, commands to the gun team, and they're like, thank God we didn't listen to your dumbass.
They're trying to get the medic to give you morphine just so you shut up.
Yeah. So, our medics didn't even carry morphine. They gave me like a pill pack, but it was more or less for, you know, to help fight infections. And that was it. Like, our medics weren't even allowed to carry morphine.
So how long until after you, I assume you end up going to the hospital and spending quite a bit of time. How long were you in the hospital?
So I was at Walter Reed for 15 to 17 months, I want to say. And it was, you know, most of that time, though, was just waiting on the Army to medically discharge me. So within 6 months, I was already doing Tough Mudders and like everything else. So my rehab was pretty good. So while I was there, I was able to help the PTs that were there and kind of shadow them. And because I felt like that's what I wanted to do, was help people when I got out. And so I was able to work alongside some of the physical therapists at Walter Reed.
Was that a difficult thing for you? Because I assume if you're a sergeant and squad leader that you're on your second enlistment at that time, was it a difficult thing for you to be like, this is where you don't choose whenever your Army career is over?
Right. That's what I tell people. That's the hardest thing. I reenlisted the month before I was blown up. So, you know, I had planned on doing 20, and I was at 6 at the time. And so I just reenlisted for another 6. And that, like, I tried to tell some of the players asked me about it, and I said, that would be like, you know, you love playing football, and all of a sudden you go down and that's it. Like, you don't have a chance. Like, it's Ryan Shazier situation where,
yeah,
you know, you get injured and you're done. But you weren't done mentally. Like you wanted to be out there. And the laying in the hospital bed was the hardest part. Was, like, here I am, a squad leader, and now I don't know who's taking on my squad. I don't know what's going on with these guys. Like, I treated those guys like my brothers, yeah, you know, and really try to do my best and look out for them while I was –
And there's certain aspects about being a military man or military lady that becomes your entire identity. Like, there's
right.
a huge part of who you are as a person, what you identify as, comes from your job, just like an NFL player would. So when you kind of have that stripped away, it's tough for a lot of guys. Did you go through that transition of, I'm getting out, what could possibly be next for me that's as fulfilling as what I'm doing now?
Yeah, I know when I first got home, like when I first got out of the hospital, everything was good. And, you know, I was enjoying spending time with family, going, you know, I had the freedom to do whatever. I was
get retirement pay for the rest of your life.
Right. Getting retirement pay, but just something was missing. And I had, like you said, you lose that identity. And now I felt like what's my purpose? Like, what am I going to do for the rest of my life now? Like, I don't have any clue of what I want to do. And so that, to me, that was the hardest thing, not having that identity anymore.
And did you stumble in, speaking of not knowing what to do, did you stumble into this Jaguars internship?
So I got involved with Wounded Warrior Project because they're based out of Jacksonville.
Right.
You know, they have the headquarters here in Jacksonville. So mm-hmm. They used to have a program called the track program where you do 2 semesters of college. And then the last 4 months of the program, you go do an internship in a local business in Jacksonville. And so I found out one of the other people that was in track, Andrew Coughlin, he now works for Wounded Warrior Project. He told me that he did an internship with the Jags, and that's basically how I even found out that, you know, that I would be able to do it. And so in 14, I did an internship, but it was more like office, like I was bouncing around all over in the office. And then I wound up with, helping the athletic trainers and the, strength staff towards the end. And the head strength coach said, hey, if you decide that you're going to go to school for, you know, sports science or sports medicine, let me know and we'll bring you back on as a full-time intern for the whole season. So that's what happened in 2017. I came
back.
Not
a bad year to be there, going to the AFC championship game. Oh, man.
Yeah, that was awesome.
I bet. So then you go out, and at the end of the season, I saw on a documentary that they did about you where you meet up with Tom Coughlin and he ends up offering you a full-time job. Were you kind of overwhelmed at that point? Like, this is going to be my life. This is going to be what I'm going to do. It's not just a season.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, dude, so the AFC championship, I was an intern. We had my position and then another internship, which we kind of set aside for guys that are in limbo, like don't have a, you know, may have gotten let go and are trying to find another job. And so that intern wound up going to the AFC championship, and somewhat a friend of mine found out, his name's Mark Lowry, found out that I wasn't able to go and decided to, you know, so the Jags had this plane deal where they take you in the plane, they put you in a hotel and everything, then you go to the game and you're in a suite. So I actually went with that group to the AFC championship. And then so after the game, like, I didn't see any of the players during that day or anything like that. I was basically a fan at that point. And so after the game, I remember texting like all the strength staff, you know, it's like, you know, very emotional. I would thank you for everything you guys did. You know, I learned a lot from you guys, and thank you for bringing me in and allowing me to be there. And so the next day I came in, I came in to clean out my locker, and I ran into Dave Caldwell in the hallway. And
For those that aren't big Jags fans, Dave Caldwell is the general manager.
Right. And so talking to the general manager, Dave Caldwell, he, I said, thank you for everything. And he could tell I was getting emotional because I thought I was done. Like, this is over. And then he goes, before you get all emotional on me, I want you to go. I think Coach Coughlin wants you to talk to him in his office. So I went over there to Coach Coughlin's office, and it's probably,
which is like probably going to see the base general whenever right. you're like a specialist or something like that. You got to go see the general. Fuck.
What did I do? What did I do? Yeah. I think it in my head. And so as I go into his office, Dave Caldwell was right behind me, and I didn't even know it. And Dave Caldwell shuts the door as I go in. And they both look at me and they say, hey, we think you would be an asset to this team. We, have watched you all year and, like what we see. Do you think you will, be an asset to the team? And I said, yeah, I'm going to do it all I can. I mean, I'll do whatever I need to. So it was just amazing that they gave me that opportunity.
Now, I know whenever I got hired at Barstool, I always felt like there was going to be an element of people who thought, oh, he just got hired because he's a veteran. He's going to do the veteran podcast. Going into a job like being in the strength staff of an NFL team, do you take that and you're like, I'm going to have to work my ass off even harder so people know that this job wasn't just handed to me. I'm going to prove that I fucking belong here too.
Yeah, I think a lot. I mean, not only do I think that people have that perception, but I also have that perception myself. Like, okay, there's people all across the country that are out there fighting to try to get on a team or in football in general. And so, they put their time in for different internships, years, and were able to get to that spot. So I know I was very fortunate and it could have, gave me the upper hand, but hey, I'll take it. However, yeah. I get it. But now it's just basically just, doing all I can to solidify that and just make myself a better strength coach. Right now I'm doing my master's. And
you looked a lot more yoked up than you did in the 2017 video. You're in the weight room yourself. I could tell. My God, dude. You've probably put on, 40 pounds of muscle in like the last 2 years?
I don't know if it's 40 pounds, but yeah,
a lot. You look a lot bigger than you did in 2017, for sure.
I have great people pushing me here, and that's the thing. I'm able to be around, some great people in this organization, and being able to work out with them and push them has been, so rewarding to me. So school and lift.
See, and I want to let the listeners know that I've grown and showed great restraint, because earlier when you said you got out of the hospital, you're out of the army, and something was missing, in the past I would have said, yeah, it's your leg. It's your leg, dude.
Oh, man. That's one thing I miss is, from one veteran to another, I kind of wish you would have said that because I get it. We mess with each other so much.
You're exactly right.
I used to get called the paper cut at Walter Reed because I was only missing one limb. And you had, guys rolling around in the wheelchairs missing 3-4 limbs, and they're like, oh, paper cut. Like,
yep. I mean, we get it on this show all the time, at my work, anytime, because I've told the story, whenever I got shot, I moved in front of a window and didn't crouch down low enough. A round came through the window and went through my arm. So now anytime we walk by windows together, people are like, careful, chaps.
Oh, man. But it's been funny here. Just some people don't know how to take it, and they like cringe, but I remember running on the field. I think it was last year. Yeah, I was just going around catching punts and helping the kickers, and went to go run for a ball, and my prosthetic snapped. And I went straight to the ground, and like the carbon fiber just split in half. And mind you,
that's the second leg you lost.
I told the the guy that makes the prosthetics. I'm not even gonna try to say that word. So I told him, he's like, I have never seen that in my life.
Too much so upper body, too much thigh strength, man. You just can't do it.
I had it 6 years and it snapped. But it's funny because I was on the ground and our special teams assistant came running over and he's like, hey, what can I do for you? I said, hey, go get my other leg.
Yeah. But, it's nice to have that as an option now, though.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man. Well, Sean, thanks so much for joining us, man. We appreciate it, dude.
Oh, thank you, man. I really enjoyed this.
And thanks for your service, man.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for your service.
This week, the Marine Corps and other branches of service as well issued out guidance because we have in 2020 big-time elections coming up. It's a presidential election season, and some people have never been in. It's important to remember that there's people in the military who are going through their very first election cycle now, and it's a presidential one and one that's bound to be contentious. So in order to nip some of that stuff in the bud, the military issued out different statements, right, Kate?
Yeah, it's basically a guide for how to behave on social media during the elections if you're active duty. So it's like it tells you the do's and don'ts. Like, yes, on your personal car, you can have an elect whoever bumper sticker. On a military Humvee, no, you can't put one on there. Haha, no shit. And you can write a letter to the editor. You can post things on Facebook, but you just have to be very careful about the way you do it. And you can like a candidate's Facebook page, but you can't tell other troops to like that candidate's Facebook page. So basically,
you can't hold a formation and be like, all right, devil dogs, everybody get out your phone. Go to Bernie 2020.
Exactly.
You feel the burn.
Right. Exactly. So it's just there. All the branches are sending out friendly reminders of like, hey, don't be an idiot during this election season. But the nice thing is that you and I are no longer in. And so we
And that's why I wanted to ask you, like, if you had to succinctly in 20 seconds or less, because I don't want to spend too much time on politics, just in 25, 30 seconds or less, give me your political positions for the 2020 election.
All right. I'm going to dig into my toolkit here and tell you how I really, I mean, people didn't ask for this. I'm going to tell you how I really feel about 2020.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no.
Oh. Oh, yourselves, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh,
yeah. Uh-oh. Yeah, you bitch. Oh, yeah. Oh, it seems like it's always me. Oh, yeah, that's what it probably is. Oh, no. Why don't you go sit on your table, fella?
That's well said.
I think
the people want to get my opinion as well. And to break down my 2020 position.
I'm sorry, but a lot of people think you and I are on the same page with everything and think
we disagree a lot.
This we had a lot of trouble with, and I'm glad that we are finally able to calm down and sit down and I'll hear you out.
And I appreciate it if you didn't interrupt because I want to get all of these thoughts out there.
Okay. Round number 6, we know that the Army-Navy game is coming up next weekend on Saturday, and we are going to be there, the whole Zero Block 30 crew. Barstool Sports is doing a huge college football day. We're going to have a big stage set up. They're doing it. Whole big thing. I think we're going down on the field again this year. So if you're in the area, if you're going to be in Philly, please come say hello to us. I think Friday night we're all going to hit up a bar, whatever. I'm super excited for it. But another exciting part of that is that they release the uniforms every year when they do. All the people who are in the Army or Navy academies get enormous boners or lady boners and go crazy about it. So they were just released today. And for Navy, it is throwbacks. They decided to take it back. The midshipmen will reach deep into their naval roots and anchor on their closely held motto that tradition never graduates. These uniforms are inspired by that which was worn by some of the greatest Navy teams to ever step on the pitch in the 60s. It pays homage to the Navy's two Heisman Trophy winners, Joe Bellino and Roger Staubach, who played in the late 50s and early 60s. They also have patches honoring helicopter mine countermeasures, Squadron 15. The gloves, if you link them together, if you link your hands together, become a Navy anchor. And the helmets look like rusty old ships. So they're Navy and gold.
We're not going to pump. We're not going to. These uniforms stink.
They stink.
Out loud.
They're horrible.
They're fucking terrible.
I'm
like,
not
of
a
all
fan.
The ones. Navy's had good ones in the past, like the Blue Angel uniform that they did a couple years ago was sick. They've had some good ones. These go back to the
snooze.
Like
fest.
We're honoring the football team of the 1960s. Like of all the things that the Navy has done in their illustrious history, you go with honoring the football. Who gives a fuck about 1960s Navy football?
And
who
to
gives
me,
a shit?
It's like a uniform that's like, hey, this uniform. Look at it. Remember when we were real good? Like, I just don't. It's Navy and blue.
Yeah,
it's like
we're
real
not that
original
great now.
Navy.
I mean, it's
Roger Staubach's not even dead. Like, you gotta
right.
at least wait. Man. You gotta at least wait so they
you can't
can
just
true.
Say
that's
someone's not
point.
Dead, Bren.
Yeah.
Jeez.
He's not. He's not. He's alive and well. You should wait until he's dead and then great. Honor him.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't know. I just feel like the whole thing is just a total snooze fest. The only cool part was the gloves that link to form something. But besides that, I was totally not impressed. The helmet looks terrible to me. It looks like cheese. It looks like moldy Swiss cheese to me with an anchor on it.
It looks like terrible MRE spread jalapeno cheese was rubbed all over.
That's
a helmet.
The exact color. I tried that yeah. when Kyle Carpenter was in here.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's the exact
it,
color.
It really
it
is.
It looks like crap. And I hate to say it because I texted Cons earlier today. I was like, hey, if these uniforms are so bad, I'm thinking about rooting on Army. And it's so bad that I'll say it. The Marine Corps should have nothing to do with the Naval Academy hereby going forward. Mm-hmm. And these uniforms are an abomination to the Lord.
Yeah, I would agree. I feel like Satan got into the Naval Academy when I look at these. It's not a good feeling.
Yeah.
Well, what
yeah,
about
oh,
Army?
Maybe it's because, you know what it is? I think it's because we've had so much Harry Potter talk on the pod of West Point is Gryffindor. And they have that up there at the old... West Point Academy, maybe Naval Academy Slytherin.
Wow. I mean, it does look like something Professor Snape would wear the shit out of. I'm not going to lie. A Dementor?
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Not a fan. Horrible.
Not a fan at all. What about the Army uniform? Because that came out. What did you think about that one?
Right. Well, Cons isn't here, and he would be the one to describe it and explain it, but he sent the photos over, and he's really excited about it. This year's Army uniforms are centered around the branch's strong tradition of training through PowerPoint presentations. Microsoft Wow. Windows actually sponsored the uniforms this year, and each player has a different slide of knowledge printed down the legs and the belly of
Which
the uniform.
Which makes sense because Bill Gates is a West Point graduate.
Yep, Bill Gates, huge West Point guy. He was artillery as well, I think.
I think so, yeah.
And the helmets have tinted shades, so you can't see if the players have fallen asleep while they read the slides on the other player's legs when they're in the huddle. Mm. That is really, really neat. I think that's very cool. And it is probably the strongest tradition of all the branches that we can all kind of rely on is the training through PowerPoint. So I think they really nailed it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so, too. All right. Let's move on to save rounds and alibis. Cons is gone, but we allowed him to do a little bit of save rounds and alibis. So, Kate, you can go ahead and say his save round.
As you're listening, Army has released... That's my Captain Khan's voice. I don't know why. I just made that one up.
As you're listening... You just scream into the mic.
As you're listening, Army has released their uniforms for Army-Navy. They look amazing as per usual. Credit to PowerPoint, Microsoft Windows, Army Equipment, and West Point History Department for knocking it out of the park yet again. I'm particularly excited because... That is the unit I served with. He was in First PowerPoint. And I think it's awesome that we are honoring an oft-forgotten generation of soldiers. Kate, at this point, please feel free to make up anything else you'd like. No,
I mean, that's just an outrageous allegation that you would make things up.
I know. It hurts, I'll tell you that.
It's unbecoming, I'd say.
It really is. It makes me... I still don't like the Navy uniforms, but now I really loved the Army ones. Now, I don't know. Now I'm a little upset at Cons. Bren?
So after a long holiday weekend, I let my room get a little messy. Mm-hmm. I cleaned it this week, sweeped it, vacuumed it, all my laundry, made my bed, all that good stuff. Felt great, but it took me a while because I would just ignore the Staff Sergeant Chap's voice in my head telling me to clean my room. Mm-hmm. I just let it get way too messy. I finally cleaned it. So my question is, I think I know yours, Kate, what is the biggest mess you ever had to clean up in the military was. I know that your story is that you had to clean up all the pubes out of the shower.
Oh, yeah.
If you want to refresh shower the people's recruit. Memory, if you have a different one, I'd appreciate that. So what is your the biggest mess you ever had to either create it and then had to clean up or clean up somebody else's mess?
Oh, I for sure, it will always be the pubes in the shower. We weren't allowed to have razors the entire time through boot camp because of a couple of different incidents. And so, yeah. That finally, the day before
but
family day.
But that's a cool thing where you can see kind of diversity in the Marine Corps. When as you get all those pubes together, it's like a cornucopia of colors.
It really was. It was a united nation of pubes.
It probably
all linked
looks
together.
Like upstate New York during the autumn.
It looked like a grizzly bear went through a wood chipper. Anyways, it was horrible. I will never forget it as long as I live. And it was, I feel like every now and then I still look down. I'm like, there's one of those pubes. It's stuck to my sweater or something. Like, it's just, they'll never go away. I'll always be tainted.
Teeth.
What's that?
I thought you were going to say teeth.
No. Every now and then I pull one out of my mouth. I say, whoop, there's another one.
I'll cough one up like yeah. a tar pit.
Yeah.
Stuck on the back of your throat.
Yeah. Oh, God.
10 years later.
No offense, Chess, but.
Mine would easily be some of the dog kennels that I've been in, just like if the dogs get bad food, like a bad batch of food, and you have 20 plus military working dogs that are sick off of. If I'll say this, we don't do free ads. I will do an opposite of free ads. If you give your dog Science Diet, which is the dog food that the military gives their dogs, you are mean. That dog food is absolute shit. It runs through these dogs like nobody's business. And you just create an ungodly smell of sulfur, dog shit, and just absolute pain. It was terrible being a dog handler from time to time. Thanks again for listening to this week's episode of Zero Block 30. We'll be back full crew next week on Tuesday. I'll be in the office all next week. And I want to mention before I go, I have my punishment for losing the Fantasy Football League. Kate's team came in one spot ahead of mine. I will be hosting 12 hours of Barstool Radio from 7 p.m. to 7 a.m.
Rumors are that it's commercial-free, by the way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Oh, fuck.
So you're not even going to get commercial breaks.
Yeah, that's tough.
I don't know what I'm going to do, honestly, for 12 hours. 12 hours commercial-free.
Just have people calling you. I'll get all the MWRs to put your number in there and then call them up and and
You know what I should do? I should set up a duty roster of other Barstool bloggers and have like a sign-up sheet where they have to call in. Like every 30 minutes, somebody new calls in.
Oh, yeah.
See if they'll do that. All right, my save round is that it's getting close again to the 78th anniversary on the attack of Pearl Harbor. And this is the first year that I've actually been to Hawaii. This summer, I went to Pearl Harbor and got to see it and see everything that went down and kind of place myself in the geolocation. It's kind of like the first time that you go down to Ground Zero whenever you go to New York, where you have this idea because you've seen it on TV. We've seen the clips of Pearl Harbor and what's happened. But actually placing yourself in the spot and looking around and thinking what the skies would have looked like, what the sounds would have looked like, the people speaking to people who were survivors of Pearl Harbor, it really gave me a greater appreciation for the horror and the absolute catastrophe that went down. Because now we look at Pearl Harbor, we look at as like the linchpin of heroism, where people saw what happened in Pearl Harbor and they came to they knew that they had to go to war against the Imperial Japanese, and then World War II really kicked off. So we look at it almost as like this kicking point for the American greatness that is the World War II veterans, when in reality, this is just an absolutely horrific event that happened in Hawaii, and we look back 78 years later, completely different of how it actually happened. But I got a little perspective when I went this year. And then being so close to this anniversary that so many Americans look back on with great respect and great deference to, there was an attack at the Harbor Hickam in Hawaii just this past week, or 2 days ago now, where an active duty shooter shot and killed some civilians that were there.
They killed two civilian shipyard employees and wounded another. And it was a Navy sailor who was doing the shooting, and then they died of an inflicted gunshot wound. So just keeping them, there's not too many details out yet, but keeping that whole area just T's and P's, but my God, you know, just thinking of them.
So. Yep, it's terrible. It's a cloudy day around a cloudy day. Sound the retreat.